Good evening. It is Intuitive Soul Radio with your host, Lori Houston. And tonight we are blessed, and I don't know if you were able to listen to the music just beforehand, but we were just listening to Cindy Ashton's Don't Rain on My Parade and a beautiful song called Butterfly, which seems to be part of her story because we're going to get into that tonight. But I am blessed to have Cindy Ashton on the show this evening. And she is the author of Kiss Your Monsters Goodbye, Overcome Your Obstacles, and Achieve the Success You Deserve. I was graced to have met Cindy this past fall, and we connected immediately. Welcome, Cindy.
Hi, Lori, and hi, everybody listening. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, it's always a pleasure, and you're such a sweet and vibrant person. Now, usually what we do is we start with, you know, how did you get to where you are? A lot of the book talks about that, but, you know, is there anything that sings to you when you think of how did you get where you are right now?
I think the number one thing that I have learned along my journey is to, if you have a passion within you that you really want to accomplish, a lot of the times we will have people say, oh, that's impossible, you can't do that, what are you thinking, you know, do this and this and that instead, that's the way to do things. And then we start doubting ourselves. And what I've really learned along my path is that those inner nudges, the things that seem to make us smile that people say shouldn't, is really what we should be doing in our life. And if you have those inner nudges, then you need to absolutely trust yourself despite the doubts of others.
Beautiful. And how excited am I that you are on the show and your book gets released tomorrow?
I know. We were talking about that earlier. It's so funny because we had set this up back in November before we even knew when my book was going to come out.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden it's coming out tomorrow. And here we are.
So your story is definitely woven throughout your book. Do you want to talk about, I guess really it was the courage behind the voice. I mean, your story, your dreams, overcoming obstacles, you know, how to dance, how to breathe, all the pain, the singing. I mean, you have really, you know, transformed your life from what could have been, you know, one of those sad stories to... And it's not really just overcoming your obstacles. I mean, you've really learned to embrace everything about your life. So you've really put your mind in motion and certainly are living far beyond the secret. And it's just really inspiring that you've been able to do all of this because you sort of had a rocky start, to say the least.
Thank you. That's so sweet of you for saying that. You know, I wrote this book because I felt so compelled to show other people that we can accomplish anything. It doesn't matter the size of the mountain in front of us. It can be conquered, absolutely, absolutely. And when I was writing this book, it felt really important for me to include my own stories because I think it just makes it more human. Because, oh, okay, so she's felt really crappy too, or she really doubted herself too at times, or she was told that she would never be able to do X, Y, or Z either. So I think that, you know, as humans, often we are taking action on our road, and we feel alone, and we feel like nobody else understands what I feel like. You know, let's say they're going through a divorce, or they're trying to achieve the status of the next Grammy-nominated singer, whatever it is, they are going after something or going through something, and they feel like they're the only one in the world that feels this way. And I just thought, people are not alone, and we need to bond together, and we need that community. And I really wanted to make the book in a way where people felt that community because I opened my heart and I was honest. There is times in the book, I know that you've read through it, you're such a sweetheart. I know there's times in the book where I outright said, I had a really low self-esteem, and it caused me to do this and that, and I was out of control, and this crazy devil spirit in me was going crazy and acting this way, and, you know, I've shown parts of myself that weren't so pleasant in the book, but you know what? We all have those days, and I think we don't talk about them enough. We all try to look perfect all the time, and I think part of the perfection is riding the mountains and the valleys.
You know, it's being authentic, and, you know, that is what you have embraced, is being truly authentic to yourself, to allow, you know, who you are to shine through, and that's really what Kissing Your Monsters has been about. I mean, especially for you. I mean, it's really, you've really embraced your authenticity, and I think, you know, a lot of times we're told to be detached, and I think that doesn't help us. There are times when that does help us. There are times when that is absolutely necessary. But to live our lives completely detached, you know, it removes us from this juicy experience that we can have.
Yeah, absolutely. You're so bang on that. You know, and a lot of the times we either don't acknowledge our feelings because we just plug along and we don't embrace what's happening within ourselves. And what happens is, because we're not embracing it, we're just staying in our mediocrity when we're really not mediocre. We're all pretty amazing. I have an entire chapter dedicated to why we're so amazing, because I just think that we forget that. We get so bogged down and we get so beaten up in life, and then we just put these shields on, and then we go through life and we get used to being stuck in our patterns and suppressing our dreams and suppressing our desires. And it is so important for us to acknowledge these emotions instead. And I know that a big argument I get from people is like, yeah, but I don't want to feel angry. I don't want to feel frustrated. And I'm not saying about being negative and staying there forever, but if you are pushing it down, you're creating cancer, you're creating disease, you're creating illness in your life, and it's going to show up one day or another. And the second part to that is that people see these emotions of fear and anger and frustration as negative. And they're really not negative. If you are walking alone at night and you have a bad gut feeling, that fear might actually be helping you. There's always two sides to the coin. And I think it's really important for us to learn how to deal with the negative emotions, or quote-unquote the negative emotions, and be able to see both sides of them. When the negative emotions are actually stopping us in our life, and when the negative emotions are actually giving us clues and awareness and protecting us somehow.
Amen. And I think, you know, that's part of what The Secret sort of didn't go into. And it didn't go into some of the things that, you know, our fears that are prohibiting us from moving forward. But also, I mean, look at a child. A child is a perfect example of what we really need to be like. You know, they get angry. They get angry for, what, 5 minutes? And then they're back into joy again. We get angry. We hold on to it for how many years?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, and we stuff it down, and then it comes back up again, and we stuff it down. And we're not letting it go. We're just holding on to it.
That's absolutely right. And I know, like, in the first chapter of my book, I talk about an instance where I was in a relationship, and I was getting married, and for years in that relationship, I was always trying to be the perfect daughter-in-law to be, and always was suppressing my emotions and putting on a smile and trying and trying and trying, and it became a really vicious circle, and it got to the point where I reached my snapping point. So for some people, their snapping point is that they have a heart attack. For me, I actually went ballistic and started swearing, and I mean, I have never told anybody in my entire life to bleep off, and that was the only one time in my life that I had, but I was totally out of control, and because I had suppressed for so many years, I ended up hurting myself even further, and I hurted them further, and it was a disaster.
I think that was called When the Books Go A-Flying, isn't it?
Sorry, go ahead.
Wasn't that called When the Books Go A-Flying?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that one. Boy, you're good. Yeah, so I call that one, And the Books Go A-Flying. And if you want to know why, then you have to read that chapter of Why the Books Went Flying. So I tried to write it in the most humorous of ways I could.
And you did.
Trying to lighten it up a little bit. But, yeah, we end up being these people who really is not who we are.
Yeah. Well, and it's true. I mean, we pick on these identities that we think, or these masks that we think we're supposed to be, you know, like the good daughter-in-law, or the, you know, the good daughter, or the good wife, or, you know, and those are the things that we think that we have to be, and everything else would, you know, we're so eager to please everybody, and we're so, you know, giving. And I know we talk about that in another chapter as well, how there's the different identities that we can take on. But, you know, we have to learn to understand who we are first. And I think your book helps people get understanding that those parts of us are not bad parts. They help us become who we are, and they help us become more authentic.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's so important for us to really start to listen to ourselves and not judge ourselves when we feel certain ways.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a classic example of when we meet somebody, we have that intuition of, oh, I really like them, or, oh, something doesn't feel right. And a lot of the times, a lot of us, when we're not living with that consciousness, we'll say, oh, Cindy, you're being ridiculous. That person is perfectly fine. And the next thing you know, you find out that they hit you over the head and mug you or something horrible, you know, or could, it doesn't have to be that extreme. They just end up being really nasty to you in a business dealing or whatever. But a lot of the times we have really great gut feelings. It's just like the mother who knows that her child broke his or her leg at school that day. But we just get so used to ignoring our inner feelings and ignoring these things, and they're so important, because when we get used to really tapping into that and not being embarrassed by it, then, you know, then we're not thinking to ourselves, oh, I'm a terrible person. How can I think this person is bad and I just met them? Mm-hmm. Well, and sometimes it's not about thinking they're bad, but if you're having a gut feeling or you're feeling angry around that person, there's a reason and you need to dig deeper. And maybe it's about the anger is protecting you from something around them.
Right. So let's talk about embracing our inner turtle.
Okay.
Because I like that.
Yes.
And it's about, you know, just us becoming really aware, because we often live this life, you know, a lot of us live it unconsciously, and we need, the more aware we are becoming, which we certainly, you know, are transforming, the world is transforming very quickly and very rapidly, and we are starting to become more aware, but we really, you know, we need to be aware of every moment and every time we're reacting to something. And in your example of, you know, what you had in that life of when the books went flying, you know, had you learn to embrace your inner turtle, which is that awareness and recognizing fears. And you give, you know, amazing options and ideas for people of how to live more consciously. So why don't we talk about that?
Sure, absolutely. A lot of living consciously is a couple of things. And when I talk about turtle, I talk about slowing down, absolutely, enough to be able to hear. Now, slowing down doesn't mean we need to be walking around going, oh, you know, 24/7. Anybody who has been in a room with me knows that I'm like a bouncy rabbit all the time. So you can still be full of energy and going, but you could be with that, with your inner self, still calm and connected and grounded and aware. So that's what I mean by the inner turtle. But there's a couple of things that you could do, and I'll give you some exercises right now. And the first is that just to become aware of our body. I have never met anybody out there that's not aware. Sorry. Every single person has a body, obviously, and every single one of us will say, oh, my stomach is hurting, or oh, my back is hurting, or yeah, my toe has been twitching, or, you know, whatever it is. We all sit there and we have all these bodily complaints, and then it turns into, oh, I'm going to go to the doctor and see what this pain is. And the interesting thing is that we are so quick to run to a doctor, and obviously if there's a serious problem, then absolutely go to a doctor. But a lot of the times, if we just tune into our body and actually start asking our body, usually the physical ailments are usually a reflection of something that's happening in our life, some kind of resistance. So the first thing that you want to do is start to breathe in a way that actually slows you down so that you can become aware of your body. So I go into lots of detail in the book, but because we only have less than an hour at this point, what I will say is that lie down on your back. If you have back problems, put a pillow under your knees just to prop you up. Put your hand on your stomach, and then put another hand on your chest. and take a very slow and easy breath in with the nose and notice what's happening. When you inhale, your stomach should actually go up, not your chest. So if your chest is going up, take smaller breaths until you get used to dropping into the belly. And the next thing you want to do is start actually counting your breathing. So you'll be breathing in, 2, 3, 4, and out, 2, 3, 4. And then you just establish a cycle. And what that actually does is it gives you some kind of balance. And from a physical perspective, it's actually very, very healthy for you because you're, most of the time when we're not breathing properly, and so we're inhaling beautiful oxygen, and we're supposed to be exhaling all the toxins. Mm-hmm. But if we're not exhaling properly, we're actually keeping some of those toxins in our body. And some people are perpetually nauseous, and they don't know why, and it's because they're not breathing properly. So just for physical reasons, you want to get balancing your breath. Then what you want to do is start exhaling longer than your inhale, and that'll totally calm you down, and it'll give you a sense of relaxation, and your heart will slow down. And once you're in that state where you are more aware and breathing, the cure is the key to embrace the inner turtle. You're going to start scanning yourself from head to toe. So you're going to start to look around your head and just observe it and notice, is your eye squeezing? Is your head, do you have like a little pressure around the third eye? Do you have like pressure behind the ears? And just go down your body. Is your stomach hurting? Is your chest tight? Is your chest open? And just start to go through your body. And eventually what you want to do is do this about 5-10 times a day. Just do a quick body scan and start to notice where you're holding tension. And then the next step is, then once you notice it, oh, I hold tension in my left shoulder, breathe into it and ask for guidance. And for some people, they ask for guidance through writing. Some people meditate. Some people talk to other people. There's different ways. So any way that you ask for guidance, prayer, whatever it is, start to just say, I've got pain in my left shoulder. I wonder what that's all about. What is that all about? And often you'll start to see patterns in your life, and you'll start to get clues. So I know immediately when I am in, let's say, a meeting with a potential partner in business, I know certain symptoms that happen in my body, if it's the right person, and certain symptoms if it's the wrong person. So when it's the right person, I automatically feel my stomach really open, and I feel really bright, and I feel sparkly. When it's the wrong person, I automatically feel tension in my left shoulder, and I also feel I'm very clammed up in general, and I feel like I'm talking faster. So what I'm saying is that it's a process, and you're not going to get it on the first day, so you just have to congratulate yourself for taking the first step. But every day, just consciously breathe, consciously go through your day, ask your body. When you're talking to people, notice when your body clams up, notice when it relaxes. Those are really good indicators of when you're happy, when you're not, when you are with the right people, when you are doing the right things in your life, when you are having resistance in your life. And when you get the resistance, that's when you can start to change it because you have awareness of it now.
That's great. And really great exercises. And, you know, the book is full of you know, wonderful tidbits for people to really understand themselves more and to become more aware of those areas within our lives that, you know, are holding us back.
Thank you.
Let's talk about reclaiming the courageous warrior, because I think, you know, that's an important aspect of something, especially for women, that is really difficult to do. And, yeah, you know, it's about confidence. And you ask, you know, an incredible question in this chapter, which is, you know, would you save a life? Let's talk about that.
Yeah, would you save a life? I often ask my audiences that because I think that majority of us, and I certainly have been there most of my life, we tend to play small. I know that each and every one of us is really amazing and brilliant, and I talk about why I know that in the book, but every single person on this earth has their own unique gifts. Some people are really brilliant in sewing and can create beautiful masterpieces that make people feel really great when they move in them. Some people are really brilliant at fixing things and can get a car to go really well and be safe for you and so on. But we all have really amazing gifts within ourselves. But because we've had someone say that we're stupid or that it's too hard or that, you know, in 2009 our economy is bad and you'll never get another job if you're laid out, so you have to put up with whatever, you know, because we have all these limited things that's happening and all these beliefs that are pounded in our head from the media and from friends and family and coworkers, everywhere we go, unfortunately, we probably, most of us have more negativity than positivity coming to us. So I kind of connect that with brainwashing. It's like we've been brainwashed somehow or another along the way, most of our lives, to believe certain things. So a lot of us, we stop claiming our courageous warrior within. We don't realize that we actually are courageous, and we stop realizing that we're worth something. And so here we are. We have these amazing gifts, whatever it is, to sew, make a car, paint, whatever your gifts are, and yet we play small and we hide because we're afraid to step outside of the box that has been created for us. And so when I talk about the courageous warrior, one of the things I talk about is that every single person on this earth is already very, very successful. They are already extremely courageous and has already conquered so much. But we take for granted what we go through because when an issue or a challenge presents itself to us, we don't sit there and think, oh, am I courageous enough to deal with this? We just do it. We just do it. It's like when I was born and I had heart problems, and I had them for years, you know, and for years after I had chronic pain, I would still go wake up at 8 in the morning and go to university, and I would still study, and I wasn't thinking at all during that time, oh, I'm so brave. I live in chronic pain and don't sleep more than 3 or 4 hours a night, and yet I'm going to university and getting A's. I never thought that was courageous, but when I look back at that, I'm like, wow, that's really cool that I did that, did A's. But a lot of us have those situations where we're actually breaking through our monsters all the time. We are actually conquering things all the time. But we have all this brainwashing that we're small, that we're not enough, that we diminish what we are actually accomplishing. And then we hold these things within us that we're not enough, that we can't do it, that we're not courageous. So I often tell people, I want you to write down 100 things that you've done in your life. And let's stop taking our lives for granted. Let's stop taking our accomplishments for granted. Everybody has accomplished so much. Everything you want to do in your future is easy compared to what you've already gone through.
Yeah. Yeah. It's you know, you're right. We take everything for granted, and we just don't think about it. And, you know, the confidence thing, so many people walk around with low self-esteem because they think truly that they're not worthy, that they're not enough, that they, you know, have all of these, they focus so much on, you know, all the problems in their life instead of looking at the brilliance that they've achieved and the wonder of who they are. And I think that this chapter really touches a lot of what this is about.
Thank you. Yeah, I just want people to realize how amazing they are, because they are. Every time I sit down with somebody and really get to know them, I'm just in awe of what they have accomplished in their life and who they are. I have yet to meet somebody that I'm not impressed by.
It's true. And the more you look at life that way, the more you can see your own divinity and your own brilliance, and that's really the focus, because we focus instead of our judgments and our complaints and our problems, and you know, and we stop seeing the brilliance in others, and therefore we can't see the brilliance within ourselves.
Yeah, and the more that we walk through life and we embrace that inner turtle and start to see things, and we slow down and we take in, you know, even just, you know, I just moved to California from Toronto, which is such a great city. But I wake up every morning, and I've only been here a month, and I still wake up and I go, oh, there's a palm tree outside my window hugging another palm tree. And I know that some people think I'm insane, but I'm just, you know, being in a new place, it's like everything is like wonderment for me. And I think about it, and I think, I wonder now when I go back to Toronto if it'll be filled with wonder. And I challenge people, what would it be like for you to walk through your life with wonder as if you're not used to it? Like, native Californians who I'm with laugh at me. They think I'm crazy because I go so crazy over palm trees and beach and all these little things. But it's because it's new to me and I'm appreciating it, and I hope I never lose that. But I challenge everybody to pretend that you've just moved countries. And what would be the new things about where you live that you could rediscover and reappreciate? And even simple things like sitting on a chair, contemplate that. I mean, we get to sit on chairs. Can you imagine if there was no chairs in existence on our earth? So, I mean, the more that we become more present and start to contemplate things and become in awe of what is around us, because truly, what is around us is pretty amazing. I mean, if somebody can create a chair and actually make it work, anything's possible. If people can fly a plane, oh my goodness. So, I mean, it's about changing your lifestyle so that you live more in a place of appreciation, awe, amazement. And the more that you do that, it just transforms you. You get to see yourself in awe. You get to see others in awe. And it's amazing how your relationships and how your life changes. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. I won't mention that we woke up in snow this morning. And
I know. I talked to my mom this morning. And she's like, how is it there? And I'm like, oh, it's 27 degrees Celsius, which is 80 Fahrenheit for my American friends. And she's like, oh, it's snowing here. And I'm like, I'm so sorry. But snow is very beautiful, although in April it's a bit of a pain. But We need to look at the awe of snow and how pretty it is and crisp it is. So it's a person living in California.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so let's talk about opening our arms to receive. And, the point that you make is, how graciously do we receive? And, are we the justifier? Are we the complainer? Are we the diminisher? Are we able to honestly and authentically receive the gifts that are given to us? Or are we, unable to accept and receive?
Yeah, that's a big one. It's really interesting when I work with clients. A lot of the times they are doing exactly what they need to be doing on their path. They're looking at their issues, they are writing in their journal, they're meditating, they're taking action on their plans, and yet they're not getting what they want. Mm. And a lot of the time it's because we have been somewhat or another, again, brainwashed to believe that it's not okay to receive. And do you want me to actually go through the different types of receivers?
Sure, that'd be great.
Okay. So the first one is the justifier. It's a person who has to justify why they deserve the good. And boy, was I ever a justifier, and I'm still working on it sometimes. Sometimes it creeps in. But, the justifier comes in, so it's like I'd say, hey, Lori, that is really, really amazing that you just got a new condo, and then you have to justify it by saying, yeah, well, I had to work like 12-hour days for like 6 months to be able to raise money to get a down payment, blah, blah, blah. And so, a lot of us feel like we need to justify our good because for whatever reason, sometimes when somebody has given us something, we've said yes, and then all of a sudden they turn around 2 days later and say, well, I gave you this sweater, so, are you going to come help me with whatever? And so we've gotten used to receiving, but then being told that we have to reciprocate and that it's not okay just to receive. So a lot of the times, a lot of us are afraid to because we're being controlled and manipulated by somebody, by a gift that somebody has given us, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
Yeah. So we feel like we need to diminish it, making it smaller. I know for me, for a long time, I had a lot of jealousy around me, and so I would always make things smaller than they were and say, oh, yeah, but I'm really struggling, or... yeah, I know I've got this, but then this is really horrible in my life. I would go into drama queen mode. And it's because I wanted to be socially loved and accepted, and if I had more than other people, then they wouldn't love me, and then I would have to find new friends. So that was a monster that I had for a long time. So there's a lot of reasons why people don't receive, but the key is that to start noticing. So when you are in a situation and somebody gives you a compliment or they try to give you a gift or they try to pay for your dinner, I want you just to notice, how are you reacting? Now, it's not about getting upset with yourself, but again, it comes back to that inner turtle awareness thing. And it's like, how did I react? Did I say, oh, no, I can't take it? Or, oh, thanks so much, and by the way, you've got great eyes. And you feel like you have to give them something back. So it's about really noticing the way that you react and then starting to change that. And then, of course, you could always just make a list of things that you need and start asking. Even if it feels uncomfortable, it probably will. But just ask and keep asking until you get a yes, because you need to reinforce within yourself that you deserve to receive.
And I think that, you know, a lot of times we're unable to receive. And I think it's, you know, something about us being told, you know, that we're to give. And there's an aspect of, especially in the spiritual realm or, you know, really any, that, you know, to receive is, you know, a bad thing. You're to give. You're not to have any expectation. And so we have all of these rules and we have these judgments upon ourselves. And it's
well, I think, I mean, here is something to consider. I mean, we were talking about women earlier, and a lot of women are trained from childhood to be givers, and there's nothing wrong with giving. I think the giving, I love to give. It's awesome. But there's got to be the balance. And so think about this. Think about the mom who has a full-time job, single mom, running off her feet with three kids. And she is go, 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 go. But she's too embarrassed to ask for help. Or when she does ask for help, she feels like she has to give back, or she says, no, I can't. You know, I need to make sure I'm there for my kids. I need to make sure that I fulfill this charity commitment, this commitment, this commitment. Well, think of it this way. If this woman, if these women, including us at times, we all do this, if we are running off our feet all the time, and we are with our three kids, let's say, and we are exhausted because we've worked all day, and we've done this, and we've done that, and we're not letting anybody come over and help us with the housework or whatever it is because we feel embarrassed or like, oh, we can't, it's shameful, whatever feelings we're having. Well, how well are you serving your kids if you are exhausted all the time?
And what message are you giving them?
Pardon?
And what message are you giving them? It's certainly not going to help them learn to receive either.
Absolutely. We absolutely model for our kids. I mean, I look at a lot of people. I was a teacher for a long time, and I would look at a lot of parents who stayed married, and the kids were so troubled. And when I would talk to the parents in interviews and stuff, they would say, well, you know, we're not happy together, but we're making it work because, you know, for the kids. And I'm like, it's not for the kids because the kids feel the tension, and you're modeling for them that it's okay to live a mediocre life, and you're modeling that it's okay to settle, and you're modeling that you are not willing to work on your marriage or to walk away and model for them that it's okay to look for a life that is more fulfilled and for a person who is more aligned with who you are at that time. And then you end up with all these kids who have all these issues.
Yeah, it's a mad cycle.
That we really... It would drive me crazy as a teacher. I'd be like, oh my God, can't you see what you're doing to your kids?
Yeah.
You know, I had one girl, sweetest girl, by the time she was 15... She was, like, doing drugs, and she was like, I'm never getting married. Marriage is for whatever, and I think love is the stupidest thing ever, and blah, blah, blah. And it was like she was so out of control. And this is a girl who was one of my smartest students ever. And, you know, and it's because her parents just let their issues get totally out of control and put it on the kids. And it's like, come on, you're not doing this for your kids. You're just not brave enough to work through your own issues, whether you stay or leave, period.
Amen.
You need to model for your kids.
Absolutely. Yes. How about finding joy? And I know a lot of people, as you talk about in this chapter, you know, we live in the future. It's, well, when I get this, I will be so happy. Or when I have this, I will be so happy. Let's talk about that.
Yeah, that's a funny thing, isn't that? Because guess what? Oh, when I get to university, I'm going to be so happy. Okay, I'm in university now. Oh, when I graduate and get to go out and work and not be in debt for my student loans, I'm going to be happy. Okay, well, I'm working now. When I don't have to work with this cranky coworker and I get to like get a promotion, I'm going to be happy. Oh, and when I get, oh, I got my promotion, great. And when I become the CEO, I'll be happy. Oh, I'm CEO now. Well, when I make enough money to buy a yacht, I'll be happy. You're now 50 years old. Are you happy yet?
Yeah.
And, you know, what it comes down to is that we absolutely want to be striving for more. We want to be stretching ourselves. We want to be going after our dreams. But in the meantime, we have to learn to be happy now for two reasons. First of all, when you're happy, the energy flows so much easier and everything just flows, and all of a sudden you actually get your dreams much faster. Things just, all of a sudden, synchronicities happen, you meet the right people. But the other reason is exactly that. You're always going to have something more that you want out of your life. So how long are you going to be saying, when I will be happy? Mm-hmm. You have to find joy now. Even if you're going through a terrible divorce or whatever you're going through, we've talked about acknowledging feelings. So, yes, you have to acknowledge your feelings and allow yourself to cry or whatever you need to do. But there needs to be the balance of finding joy for yourself. And part of finding joy is allowing yourself to receive it. A lot of us don't feel like we're worthy enough to receive. It's like, when I work hard enough and I prove myself by accomplishing X, Y, Z, then I'll be worthy enough to have joy in my life.
And we learn how to find our positive pill. You know, this is such an important thing. And the example you gave of the woman at the airport at 7 o'clock in the morning was just so incredible, because you could just feel, you know, her joy. But, you know, we all need to find things that bring us joy, the positive pill that we need to, you know, to switch us over when we're feeling blue, like something that we can do immediately. And I love that you gave, you know, these ideas and, you know, create your list and gratitude, which we know, you know, is so incredibly important for these times that, you know, when you can honestly and authentically feel grateful, then, you know, you shift so much in your life.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Gratitude is so important. And I think I said it in the book, like, even before you go to bed, five things. Write down five things. They can be point form. It doesn't need to be a novel. Mm-hmm. That you are truly grateful for that day. Because even if you've had the worst day possible, you got a flat tire and you discovered that your debts didn't get paid because something got lost in the mail, whatever horrible thing happened that day, you could still be grateful that you're breathing. You could still be grateful that you are under a roof and that you have a blanket on you. Unless you're, you know, in Hawaii. But, you know what I mean? Like, there is always something to be grateful for. And it's not about just randomly going, oh, I'm grateful for breathing, food, shelter, and my boyfriend. No. Take your time. I'm really grateful for breathing. Really feel that. I'm really grateful that I actually have a bed to sleep on and I don't have to sleep outside on cold rocks that are pointing to my back and then I start bleeding. You know? I'm getting a little dramatic. But it's about really feeling the gratitude before you go to bed. And then you wake up and you're in a better, positive spirit. You sleep better because you've gone to bed with that positive energy. Mm-hmm. And it starts to shift your life. Again, it goes back to changing your lifestyle to one of gratitude and awareness and walking with consciousness.
Do you want to talk about the positive pill a little bit? Because I think that's just so important. How we need to find the things that will shift us out of our whatever it is that we're in to get us back into joy.
Yeah. And, you know, it's important to make that list of what are things that instantly lift you up, that make you happy. And, you know, and it depends on the type of person you are. I am very musical and kinesthetic. So if I'm feeling down, I will put on some really great music and I'll just dance around my house like a maniac and close the windows so nobody sees me. Although sometimes I don't, just give people a view. You know, for some people, they are visual people. And what really brings them joy is to just take that paintbrush and paint. Other people are more, they're readers, so they carry little, so people who are really into reading carry like a little stack of quotes that are in your pocket or in your purse, and just pull those quotes out, things that make you feel excited or something, or a joke that makes you laugh, or have a list of like five friends that you can call that would be great for you, and each friend has a different function. One will make you laugh, one will give you wisdom, you know. You want to have a bag of tricks, from small little things to big things. So, you know, a small thing could be the quote. A big thing could be that you love to go, I don't know, scuba diving.
Yeah.
Now, that's not something you could do in an instant moment, but if you're having a really rough week, you know that you could plan for that on the weekend.
Mm-hmm.
So it's to have your little bag of tricks of at least 5 to 10 things that will bring you out of your shell and start to make you feel a little bit better.
Mm. Yeah, I think it's really important. I try and instill this on my clients all the time. It's like you need to be able to have something that will shift you, you know, as quickly as possible out of when you get stuck.
Yeah.
I just think it's really important.
Well, they're very lucky to have you.
Well, thank you. Claiming your slice. You know, there are so many infinite possibilities, and visualization can really assist people when you are focusing on what you want and not when you're focusing on the things that you don't want.
Absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, when you're claiming a slice of the pie, something that I haven't really, I don't think I've actually read this anywhere, but I wrote it in my book, and I'm sure somebody else out there has. When you're visualizing what you want, a lot of the times we're just visualizing one aspect of what we want. So some people will say, oh, I want a job promotion, or I want a promotion in this way. So great. So you know that you want a job promotion, you want to become, you know, a partner in your accounting firm, let's say. Okay, so now what you need to do is also visualize your entire life and how it's going to change when you get there. And that is the missing key for a lot of people. So in the book, I have lists of life areas. So you have now become a partner in an accounting firm. And what has changed? How has this changed your romantic relationship? Well, it's changed because now we actually have more money. And because we have more money, we actually take more weekends away. Great. So it also changed your financial. Okay, so what else can you do with the extra money? Oh, well, now I have extra money to go for a weekly massage and a spa day or whatever it is. Or now I have extra money to donate to a charity or whatever it is. So you want to actually go through, how is it going to change your life with your family, your friends, your finances, the environment, where you live? You want to visualize every single aspect of how your entire life is going to change, not just, I'm visioning this job, I'm walking in with my business suit or my pretty dress or whatever you wear as an accountant. You know, it is more than just the job itself. You need to visualize every aspect of how it's going to change when you get there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it is very important. And, you know, I always say so many people, we dream so small, and it's about dreaming big and just allowing that magic, you know, to fill in the void. Like, all the rest of it will just occur synchronistically when we can dream bigger.
Yeah, and sometimes a lot of us are afraid to dream bigger because we always feel like, oh, but there's already somebody else out there doing that. Yeah, but they're not going to do it the same way you are. Mm-hmm. And, you know, what I love about the self-help world that we're in is that we are so great at actually helping each other. And it's because we all recognize that we all have different ways of doing things. Like, classic example is that Debbie Ford does some pretty similar work to me. But we might have, you know, crossover clients, but we probably will have very different clients because my personality is so different from hers. And we're both brilliant in our own way, but we need more and more people to be doing what we're supposed to be doing because we will attract the right people. We all have different personalities. Not everyone's going to feel aligned with Debbie Ford. Not everyone's going to feel aligned with me. So it's about understanding that when we go after the big dream, we don't need to worry about competition. There's no such thing. Mm-hmm. There really isn't.
Absolutely. I think we get all caught up and worried about that competitive edge that that is in the male-dominated world. But, you know, it's so true that we all have very unique gifts, and it is our uniqueness that will, you know, will attract those people that are meant to come to us. It's, you know, we never have to worry about that. I know a few people that, you know, don't want to connect with other people that do the same thing, and I think, you know, in this tiny little planet where there are 6 billion people, you know, we really need to network together because we're not supposed to be doing this alone anymore.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, it's so crazy. Like, it's, you know, we all have unique gifts. Everyone, if we were all worked together, imagine how amazing it would be.
Yeah, it would be so beautiful. And I see it because I'm in the self-help world and a lot of us are very collaborative and we all help each other because we all have very similar missions. And I see how beautifully it works, and it would be amazing to bring that into corporate Canada, corporate America, bring it into schools, bring it everywhere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes, that would be beyond amazing.
I know. Our whole world would shift, but I do believe our world is going through a very positive shift right
Absolutely.
Now.
Absolutely. Yeah, for sure. Okay, identifying and embracing the fears.
Okay, this is the big chapter.
Isn't it?
So all the chapters before were more or less building blocks of some lifestyle things that would help you, because once we get to the monsters, I wanted everybody to be prepared. So in terms of identifying and embracing fear, this chapter is all about looking at fear and what is real fear, what is false fear, and how do you break it down? And a lot of the times we create our own monsters. We create our own fears. I mean, classic example, you call your friend and they don't call you for 2 weeks and all of a sudden your mind is going, oh my God, Susie didn't call me back. She doesn't like me anymore, and she's ignoring me. She's such a snob. Like, oh my God, I can't believe she wouldn't call me. You know, we get into these little petty things that are classic, you know, like classic example. My friend emailed me a few months ago, and she said, hey, I need space. I can't talk to you right now. And, you know, my little monster went off and said, oh, she's upset with me. And then I said, oh, you're the monster kissing queen. Stop that. And so I just called her and I said, hey, that's cool. Is everything okay with me or do you need space for something else? She says, no, no, no. She says, I love you to death. I just need space on something else. And I said, okay, that's cool. I said, if you need me, I'm here. She says, that's really great. And that was the end of it. And it was dealt with within 5 minutes. But how many of us gets a little voice of, oh, this person's going to ignore me or they've cut me off or, you know, and they go on and on and on and on and on. And we make all these assumptions that they don't like us or that they don't think we're good enough or whatever assumptions we have, or we let our past determine our future. So just because something negative happened in the past and we try the same thing, we automatically expect it to happen again the same bad way it did before. And it's like, no, 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 you're just creating all that nonsense in your head. So this chapter is all about, okay, let's look at how you actually break down your fears and how do you identify and pull out what is real and needs to be dealt with, because fear is our friend. When we know what the real fears are, then we're able to deal with them in a positive way and create solutions. So this chapter helps us to pull out the real fears and actually just look at the other ones, those assumptions, those judgments, those past patterns, all the craziness that goes on in our brain, and just really break it down and look at it and square in the face. And, you know, we actually end up usually, most of us end up just laughing because we can't believe how much craziness we have going on that's not even true, and we work ourselves up for nothing.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what that chapter's all about.
Definitely. Getting beyond our patterns and the, what was it? The shrubs?
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, that was actually a really funny chapter. I guess I could tell. Do you have mostly Canadian listeners?
No, but go
mixed?
For
okay,
it.
Okay, I'll tell you this anyways because I'm an innocent Canadian with this. The original chapter title, which I created, which totally was not thinking this way, was Look Beyond the Bush. And I didn't even think about it. And so I was down in the U.S. and somebody was, and the person who worked with me on the book, who was editing, said, we need to change this to shrub. And I said, why? I said, look beyond the bush. It's good alliteration. And she says, no, no, you can't do that. Americans are going to think George Bush. And I burst out laughing because I'm Canadian. I didn't even think of that. I totally didn't mean George Bush on that one. So, and I thought, well, I don't care. I don't mean him. And she's like, you have a big American base that's going to be reading this. You need to get rid of that. I'm like, okay. So it's not as snazzy as a title. But I thought it was pretty funny.
It was.
Yeah, okay. So looking beyond our patterning, and it goes back to a lot of what I was saying before,
mm-hmm.
in terms of we've, quote unquote, gotten brainwashed most of our life and into these patterns. And the thing that I talk about is set point theory in this mm-hmm. chapter. And set point theory, okay, let me just go back a second. A lot of people out there are preaching the quick fix. Change your life in a day. Make $10 million in 3 months or whatever. There's mm-hmm. always a quick fix out there. And I am like the anti-quick fix person. I don't believe in quick fixes. If you have been brainwashed your entire life to believe that 2 + 2 = 4, I'm sorry, you're not going to be brainwashed to believe it's anything else anytime soon. It's like if you've had a mom or dad that said, you know, money is the root of all evil since you were a kid, you're not going to break through that in one day. And I'm not saying this to discourage anybody because you can absolutely break through your patterns and there are ways to speed it up, but it's like it's your, you know, Jerry and Esther Hicks call it your emotional set points. And basically that's what it is. It's a set point. It's we have a box or our shrub or our bush that we live in, and that is what we know. And so when we decide to take a big change and step outside of our shrub, then we just need, it stretches us outside who we are. So a lot of the time we're kind of on the fence going back and forth until the full change has been made. Classic example, if you want to look at it on a physical level, is like losing weight. Mm-hmm. How many people out there gain weight suddenly? They suddenly gain that 100 pounds. No, it doesn't happen. They gain the weight very, very gradually. months, and then all of a sudden there's all these diets that say lose 30 pounds in 5 days, and it's like, that's not going to work. Mm-hmm. It's not. If it took you, you know, 2 years to gain 100 pounds, it's not going to take you 30 days to lose it. Mm-hmm. So the point that I'm saying is that just like you need to lose weight gradually, you need to change your patterns gradually, and you need to just keep being aware. Look at it like a fun thing to do. Don't be so heavy about it. A lot of us go, oh, but I need to change it, and then they get, I'm going to be spiritual, and I'm going to be fierce, and I'm going to do this, and I'm going to do that. And it's good that you're motivated, like be motivated, but don't start going, how come it's not happening yet? And, oh, I slipped here, and I had a negative thought here, or I repeated the pattern here. I'm so mad at myself. I don't want people to be mad at themselves. I just want them to take action, and when they get a little off course, laugh at themselves and say, okay, that was feedback. Let's get back on track, and just bring it up a little and just recognize that patterns sometimes take a while to change, mm-hmm. but you can do it, and you just keep taking action, and your life will get better and better and better.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, you mentioned a really important thing about our comfort zone and how we get, you know, stuck in our comfort zone because, well, that's comfortable.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's really about taking those steps out of the comfort zone, like doing those things that are outrageous so that we, you know, move out of that place, because that, you know, that definition of insanity when you keep doing the same thing and expecting a different result. I mean, that's really an important piece to remember, that, you know, we have to step out of that comfort zone if we want to change our patterns, if we want to do things differently, and, you know, and, you know, to be gentle with ourselves, because I think...
Absolutely. You know, and the other thing, too, is that, again, here's where the comes where you can make a little list of all the things that you want to do. And, you know, if you're feeling a little timid and a little bit nervous about doing this, do shake up your routine just a little bit. It's about getting comfortable with change. So it's like if you always go out for Thai food on Friday night, I dare you to go out for Indian, you know? Or if you were always having, you know, date night is always movie night, well, can't you guys, like, maybe go rollerblading instead? So it's like doing, you know, if you always put Italian seasoning on your steak, let's try rosemary. Or is rosemary Italian? I'm not sure. Trying, I don't know, cinnamon. I don't know if that would go with steak. But you know what I mean? Like, you know, and then make a list of all the things you want to do and try to change things up a little bit here and there. And then you'll start to build the confidence of, like, hey, I tried Indian food and I survived it. Didn't like it, or I loved it, but I survived it, whether I loved it or not. So it's about taking little steps, and then eventually you can start to take bigger steps and start to do bigger challenges. And, you know, I've gotten to a point in my life where I'm getting so comfortable with change that I can take really big leaps now and challenges and get through them, like, almost seamlessly. I'll still have monsters come up, but I can shift stuff so quickly now. You know, like the recent thing, like I moved countries last month. and you know, everybody I meet here goes, you're not from here? You just seem like you're from here. Like, I have been able to adjust so quickly because I've gotten so used to taking big leaps that this is the biggest leap I've taken. And it's been pretty seamless. Yeah, I've had a couple of days where I missed family and a couple of days where, you know, I'm like, am I out of my mind? I left a country with free health care. yeah, health care here is very expensive. God bless all the Americans. I have so much respect for them. Yeah, so it's, you know, you'll get, so start with the small stuff, because I know this. If you start with the small stuff, build up your confidence and start to go for the bigger stuff and the bigger stuff, and then you're going to see big changes. You're going to get comfortable with change, because you'll just have a knowing within yourself that it's going to be okay and that you'll be fine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Let's talk about finding the gift. I know you spoke about how you and Debbie Ford are, you know, doing similar work, and this is certainly something that I learned from her, that about finding the gift, you know, in everything that we do, and, you know, that's, you know, helping us find that blessing, helping us release, you know, the intensity that certain situations build when we can find the gift that they bring us.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. In the chapter, I talk about finding the compassion and the forgiveness. A lot of us, and I've been there so many times, something happens to us and we are angry forever and we can't forgive that person. And really, we're just hurting ourselves because it's just negative energy and it's sitting in our body and it's unhappy. And it's about looking at a situation, and it could be something as simple as like a disappointment. Like I had auditioned for a dance program, and I didn't get in, and I was so angry because I had spent hours and months and years training, and I didn't get into this company. And the interesting thing is that when I stopped feeling sorry for myself and playing the victim, and I said, okay, just move on, what's next? I ended up getting discovered as a singer and ended up going to university for singing and ended up starting in this whole other career as a singer, dancer, actor, and not just a dancer.
Mm-hmm.
And ended up being the greatest blessing of all. So, I mean, that's a smaller thing, but, I mean, on a bigger thing, people who go through divorce, I mean, I've been through it, or people who have been a victim of a violent crime or whatever it is, those bigger things, when I talk about forgiveness and when Debbie does and anybody else that talks about forgiveness, we're not saying that the actions are okay.
Yeah.
If somebody treated you badly, we're not saying that it's okay if they treated you badly, but what we are saying is that what have you learned from that? What are the gifts that you can take from that? So, you know, I talk about in the book how I was robbed at gunpoint when I was 18 and how for years I wouldn't even leave the house because I was so terrified at night to go out because I didn't want to get hurt. And when I finally was working on my issues, what I came to realize is that, you know, the first step was the compassion and to think, for somebody to violently act out that way, what were they going through? What was this person's life like that would make them react to another person and behave and take action in such a horrible way? And you start to think about what that person's life has been like and the suffering to drive them to where that is. And that's the first level. And the second level of the forgiveness is, how has it enriched your life? And for me, the thing that I remember the most about that is his eyes and the fear in his eyes. And all I can think about is how he was this terrified little child who was so afraid and just so desperate.
Mm-hmm.
And when I think about that, it makes me want to do my job even more. Go out there and help people get a self-esteem. Go out there and help people to take responsibility for their lives so that they can start changing them and not react badly and take action in a negative way. And so that was a very, very profound experience for me because the gift of it was to have the deep compassion of the suffering of our world and that I wanted to be one of the positive people in this world making that change. So there's always a good that comes out of something, no matter how horrible it is. You need to look at what it has done for you in terms of who has it made you, the strengths that you find within yourself, the lessons that you've learned, how it has changed you in terms of the way that you react to other people, the way that you do your work. There is always a blessing. You just need to be willing to stop being the victim and look at it.
Mm-hmm. Amen. You know, there's so many in your book, and we're running out of time. I really love the leave the baggage because I think, you know, we often hold on to our past in ways that is so incredibly damaging, and we really need to let go. But I also really liked your last two, which is, you know, don't argue with the universe because this is where...
I've just done that way too many times. I know better.
Yes, it sounded like you did a few times.
Oh, yeah. I've spent most of my life arguing with the universe. But, you know, it's interesting. The more that I listen and the more that I take action based on inspired being that comes through me, the better my life gets. Because ultimately, it's important to hold that end goal really, really strong of what we want, what our desire is, and then allow the universe to show us the way. Because often we sit there and we're like, well, how am I going to do this? And I'm going to try this. And I'm going to try that. And we got so caught up with the how that we are missing the universe giving us this giant open door because we're so stuck in our thinking. So It's about saying, this is what I want. I don't know how it's going to happen. Show me and be willing to take that risk when it comes. And again, it will get easier to take the risk when you get comfortable with change.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, to look for those signs, because the signs are always there. We miss them. We're just not aware enough. We're not looking for the signs. The doors open. We just, you know, are afraid to walk through them. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Hmm. So keeping the train going and staying motivated, you gave a very powerful example in your book of someone who keeps you motivated because she wasn't able to live the life that she wanted, that the two of you spent days, you know, imagining in your mind and playing, you know, at a time when it was probably very vulnerable for both of you, yet the two of you sort of inspired each other.
Yeah.
And that was a really powerful example, and it made me think of, you know, a similar example in my life of, you know, being told I could do anything that I wanted. And, you know, I think let's just talk about that briefly before we have to go. But
yeah, so very briefly, you know, if we have a desire, an end goal, something that we really want, it's about getting below that and asking yourself, but why? Why do I really want to make extra money? A lot of people are like, I want to make extra money for this and that reason. It's like, let's look beyond that. What is it really that you want? You know, so for me, why do I really, really want to be out there performing and speaking and blah, blah, blah? And for you, why do you want to be out there, Lori, coaching people and helping them with their intuition and giving them the guidance? And there is something below that. And the key is to start looking at the things that's happened to you in your past. Think about times in your life where you felt really passionate and why. And those experiences shape you, and they are your motivator. And so when you feel like you've been kicked down, like you've taken action and it didn't work, you want to look back at those experiences, and it's like, yeah, that's why I have this passion. And you want to reignite your passion. It's just giving you that extra confidence, that extra drive to have those stories in your back pocket of, yeah, this is why I am running a center for autism, because I know that this incident has happened in my past, and I was able to shift in this way, and now I want to help other kids. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It's really about finding what your driving force is, writing it down, and referring back to it as much as you can.
Mm-hmm. Well, Cindy, what a wonderful book. It's, you know,
thank
it's
you.
A quick read. It has amazing examples of, you know, anchoring your message within your body. And, you know, people that get this book will definitely help shift their lives.
Thank you. That's so lovely to hear.
Mm-hmm. And it comes out tomorrow.
It does. Although if you go to the website now, I think the links are working now.
Okay, so tell people how they can get a hold of you and how they can get this incredible book.
So if you go to kissyourmonstersgoodbye.com, you can get the book today. There is about $10,000 worth of downloadable bonuses for you as well, but those will be active tomorrow. So you just have to wait till tomorrow, but if you want to get the book today, you can.
Perfect. And if it's okay with you, I'm going to replay Butterfly and have it on your interview.
Oh, well, thank you. I would be honored.
Great. Well, Cindy, I hope to have you back again, because this has been fun, and I think we could, you know, go through some of these a little bit more depth, or, you know, talk about some more interesting things, because I know you do a lot of amazing things. So I would love to have you back, and I hope we can reconnect soon.
Thank you, Lori. I really appreciate the opportunity to spread my gifts. Thank you so much. And thank you to everybody who's listening. It's an honor that you've shared the last hour with me.
Thank you. All right. So we'll be back on Thursday, and we're going to play Butterfly by Cindy Ashton.
Of fall. In our backyard I watched you grow, carefree as a ragged doll, precious moment in my mind. But time froze in the winter snow on the day I heard you call. Unprepared, impossible to know, far too young to have a damaged heart. Like a butterfly, you are delicate and strong, and you've always battled on. Hoping that that the future will show a playground and a second start. Like a butterfly, you are delicate and strong, and you've always battled on. My butterfly, soar free with all your courage. But you have colors.